This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Tomorrow at noon, so 24 hours from now, Adam Peters will take the podium at the Indy Combine to hold a press conference. We will carry that live. So tomorrow, 24 hours from now, 12 noon, Adam Peters, we will carry live during the show. I don't know how much we'll get from Adam Peters. We don't typically get a lot from him, but we will carry that live. Ben Standing is out in Indy. He joins us right now. Of course, Ben writes for The Athletic. He's got a podcast called Last Man Standing. And, of course, you can follow him on X at Ben Standing. So we talked on Friday, and I just read your story that you put out this morning. This has the potential to be a big blockbuster news-worthy week. I mean, typically, it always has that potential. But with names like Myles Garrett out there, give me the stuff that you're expecting. Give me the possibilities for this week.
Yeah, well, and just to sort of set the stage, like, obviously, you know, there's rumors here, there, the national insiders or local beat writers or whatever. But the unique part here with the Combine is it's the one NFL event where everybody who is at the exact same place. All the, you know, almost every team has their coach and GM here, plus other executives and scouts. All the agents are here. They've got agent business to do, but they're also here because the teams are here, not to mention then, of course, the prospects as well. And when it comes to the free agents, yes, you can't talk directly about anything. You know, legal tampering period is not till March 10th. But, you know, needless to say, when your agents represent a lot of people, there's ways to finagle conversations to get to, getting a sense of the marketplace, whether it's free agency or trade as well. And that's why, like, we'll see what happens this week, whether, you know, the Browns show any sign of wavering on their claim of not trading Myles Garrett. I know Washington obviously is not in the quarterback business, but what the Rams do with Matthew Stafford could have ripple effects across the board in terms of which teams are more aggressive in free agency or with the trade market beyond him. Or, you know, if they don't get a Stafford, then, you know, do they feel compelled to do something else? What is the butterfly effect? So, you know, a lot goes on here. And just the one example for Washington that somewhat pertinent is, you know, a few years ago, Pete Carroll was here when he was still head coach of Seattle. And he was saying, hey, we're not trading Russell Wilson. We have no intention of trading Russell Wilson. We knew Washington was among the teams seeing about his availability. 6 days later, they trade Russell Wilson. And the day after that, Washington trades for Carson Wentz. So a lot of the things that will happen, I think, really start to happen here because everybody's seeing each other face-to-face and can have more direct conversations.
Yeah, you know, if you recall, I mean, we don't need to go back down this road because, again, it doesn't matter anymore. But Washington offered, reportedly offered Seattle more than Denver offered. But they wanted to trade him to the AFC, and they wanted what's-his-face as a quarterback. There was a belief there why am I blanking on the quarterback? The Giants quarterback, backup quarterback, the Missouri quarterback.
Oh, Drew Locke.
Drew Locke. that there was a belief that Drew Lock could be a potential starter for them. And Washington didn't have a player of note that they wanted to send back. Look, you mentioned something on Friday that you also just wrote about a few hours ago. And I mentioned this after you were, you know, came on with us. And I thought it was interesting. And I think that, you know, a lot of people are surprised at this. It's not a shocker because it's certainly something that's been discussed. But you write in your story that, you know, there's a chance here that, I mean, that they will release Jonathan Allen this week. Whether it's this week or prior to free agency beginning, that you leaned in the direction of it being more of a probability than a possibility. I want you to just explain to everybody why.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I think you got to look at it from both of the angles, right? He's going into the last year of his contract. His cap hit will be $22 million. He does not have any guaranteed money left on the deal, which isn't necessarily a massive issue if he's going to be on the team, right? I mean, if John Allen's on the roster, he's playing, you know, for the team. But, you know, nonetheless, you know, there's reason for John Allen's side to be saying, hey, we're going to the last year of our deal. We'd like to get an extension so we're, you know, locked in for more and get some more, you know, immediate money for him. You know, what do we do here? Let's do something. And Washington, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, right? Because you can lower that cap number. Make it a, you know, give yourself even more room to get more players. That would be helpful too. But the problem is, if you're Washington, well, do you want to extend John Allen? You know, look, he's been a very good player for them over the course of time. But as we know, the defense was still not particularly good last year, whether he was in the lineup or not. Do they really need? Verron Payne's not going anywhere because of his contract extends even further than Allen's does now, and his cap hit is just too massive for them to move off of. Would be a big one for them. So, you know, they can move off of John Allen with really a minimal dead cap charge of $6 million. They obviously drafted Johnny Newton last year, so there's a, in theory, viable backup ready to go. And, you know, also look, I mean, to some degree, Allen was part of the previous regime. I know that Dan Quinn has always said, hey, we don't look at it as, you know, who's part of what group, that we're all together. But, you know, there is still something to be said for that. It's not the guy that you brought in necessarily, right? So, you know, I think all these factors, unless Washington thinks to themselves, hey, we want to give John Allen a new deal, I just don't see that. And the defense, just the where it was, like, they need more help, right? So it's not like you have to say, wow, this defense was top five, keep the group together. So moving on from him, I think, you know, with clear cap space, would open up a room for Johnny Newton if you think that's the time. Or, you know, you can go out and get a defensive tackle that you like. So, I think it's a reasonable chance that he is out. But you have to put the whole picture together, and that's the part that's a little bit challenging. We don't quite know what their other plans are in terms of spending or not spending. So maybe his cap hit isn't a big deal if they're not going to be as aggressive as maybe some people think.
You know, it's kind of interesting about the John Allen situation, because you just mentioned it, that basically there's no money left on the deal for him other than, you know, a base salary to play out and earn over 2025. You know, there's a huge benefit to a player to get as much possible up front. I mean, it's use of cash, you know, over a longer period of time, you know, to get a higher guaranteed number, to get a higher signing bonus number is beneficial to the player. The reason the teams do it sometimes is that it's in exchange for kind of a longer term deal where they can spread it out cap wise. But when you get towards the end of that deal, the player feels like, well, there's no more money left in this deal for me that's guaranteed. And yet they benefited from the deal. The preference for a player should be to get as much of it in cash up front, no matter what it means on the back end. And yet there is some sort of de-incentivized environment that it creates for the back end of the deal, even though what the team did for the player when it signed the player to the contract extension was better for the player. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's just a vulnerability. I mean, as is the last year, which is, you know, it's no different than when we talk about coaches, right? You know, coach going into the last year of a deal, you not extending that person, you know, it kind of sends a message, perhaps, like you're willing to, you know, play it out and see what happens, which is also not necessarily the best vote of confidence. But, like, for example, Terry McLaurin is in the exact same boat. He's actually, you know, he also has he has 1 year left in his deal. There's no guaranteed money left. And, you know, it's fair to say Terry McLaurin, as even for the contract he had signed, especially based off of last year, he outperformed it, or at least certainly said, hey, I am definitely worthy of this kind of money. The receiver market's jumped up the last few years. T. Higgins is out there this year. He could, I don't want to say reset it, because I don't mean like they're going to pass Justin Jefferson or Ja'Marr Chase is probably going to go. But, you know, there is that next tier or two. Where do they fit in there? And, do you hurry up and make a move on Terry McLaurin to get that done before free agency starts? Or does Terry McLaurin say, hey, no, we're going to wait. We're going to see where the market goes. Last time, the market kept going up the year that he signed his extension and he was able to benefit from it. So, in this case, I would imagine they will get him a deal done to help lower his cap number, all these things. So, yeah, John Allen's not the only one in that spot, but to me, between the two, it's a no-brainer that McLaurin gets a new deal done. Wait, if John Allen is at best iffy.
I think it's interesting. You've definitely, I just want to be clear on this. You're leaning in the direction of you believe John Allen will be released.
Yeah, and just to be clear, I'm not saying Adam Peters is not telling me his plan. We went through this last year, right? They're pretty good about keeping things close to the vest. But, reading the tea leaves and, trying to figure it all out, it just seems to me, again, I guess tell me the justification for keeping Allen in pain. Forget everything else. Does somebody go, wow, we definitely have to keep them because based on the four, all the time together, this defense was really good. It hasn't been, right? And, last year, I'm not saying the run defense struggles were on them. A lot of it was teams going to the edge. But at the same time, it's not like there were too many games, throughout their career. And again, they've been individually really good at times. But, it's not like this defense has been like, wow, they took the game over. I mean, even if, forget statistically, how many games were there last year or before that where you're like, wow, this group, the other team is going to have to completely change their plan because these guys are getting inside the way we've seen Washington have to. When certain defenders on other teams are just starting to take over.
Yeah, the only thing that is in the back of my mind on this is that when John Allen came back much faster than, was anticipated, I just remember the head coach, Dan Quinn, talking about sort of what it meant to him and how impressive that was to him. And I just wonder if that... they want John Allen back in that locker room for another year or, beyond that. I don't know. It would depend on what he can get in the open market next year as an unrestricted free agent. Of course, they could always franchise him in 2026. On the list of free agents that they have, who's got the biggest market if they hit the open market?
Probably say Jeremy Chinn would be the one I'd be curious to see. This was a guy who was the runner-up, as we know, to Chase Young for Defensive Rookie of the Year in 2020, and then things kind of went a bit sideways for him as Carolina's imploded themselves, And that's why Washington was able to kind of get him as a sort of a, prove-it kind of a one-year contract, and I think largely he did that. And that, now the question is, what does that mean? Safety isn't typically a position that teams go too crazy in spending, and there's other safeties who are going to be out there that will be interesting. But to me, and also he's his age, right? I mean, he's not Bobby Wagner, Zach Ertz. They had pretty good years themselves, but they're on the older end of things, right? I don't see them getting bigger deals. Whereas Chinn, I think was he 27? I want to say, he's in the prime years. So if you think that last year was a sign of okay, he's got a lot here, and we really like his playmaking or his hitting, whatever. That, that could be a missing piece for a team's defense. So, to me, he would be the one. And like I said, it's not like Ertz or Wagner couldn't justify good deals based off of their play. But based on their age, that's a short-term play, for a team that's maybe on the cusp of contending or something. But, I guess you could say, if a team has a young quarterback and they saw what Ertz did for Jaden, they'd like that. But that's a much more niche kind of group looking at them.
What about De'Ami Brown? Is there a market for him?
It's interesting, right? I mean, even for most of the season, he was relatively underwhelming in terms of, pass production. I mean, he did get, Dan Quinn, I remember very early on back in, whether it was OTAs or training camp, talking about guys were standing out, and he brought up De'Ami Brown, and it wasn't because of playmaking. It was because of his hustle and his energy and his willingness to do whatever they were asking him to do. And then as the season went on, especially in the end, he has two, he set season high with receiving yards and back-to-back playoff games. I don't know, though, if there's going to be a huge market for him. I think what is interesting would be if you're a team that says, hey, we need more speed. Well, maybe we don't have a lot of draft picks, or we're, you know, we need our draft picks for something else. Maybe we take a flyer on this guy, see if he can build off what he just did and give us, you know, more than maybe a rookie would this year. I mean, you think even from Washington's perspective, right? I mean, everybody's saying they got to get better at receiver. Okay, but I mean, the group last year wasn't bad. Luke McCaffrey, in theory, should be getting better going into his second year. Maybe there's a world where they say, hey, we need to spend our draft picks as best we can on the line and some, you know, and cornerback maybe. So let's go with, let's bring Diami back, a younger guy, plus Luke. That's going to be sort of our, you know, promising group going forward. But, yeah, I mean, I would be surprised if he had, like, a real big market, but he certainly will get more attention than you would think after what he did late in the year.
Talking to Ben Standig, Bill Barnwell wrote this morning on ESPN.com that Marcus Mariota might be the most, you know, likely to net a guaranteed deal in the neighborhood of $8 million per year to back up somebody in the league. Do you think it'll be Washington?
So, you know, I think the question here, he talked at the end of the year, he said, look, when you find a culture that works like this, you don't easily leave that. And I think for a guy like him who's, you know, an introspective kind of a human, forget quarterback, he's, you know, I think that means something. He's also been to some tough places. You know, we know like the Atlanta situation didn't work out and so on. But obviously if he's here, he's not playing unless Jaden Daniels gets hurt, as was, or, you know, as was the case when Mariota played last year. If the Indianapolis Colts, since I'm happy to be here, you know, if, you know, they had Joe Flacco with Anthony Richardson is, you know, still their hope for the future, but he's hardly a proven commodity at this point. Joe Flacco is probably, I don't know if he's going to retire or what, but he's probably not going to be back. So they could use a guy like Mariota, and maybe to the point Mariota plays. I mean, Flacco has played a decent amount last year and could have played more if he had, but he just wasn't productive himself. So, you know, does that kind of an opportunity open up? I've tried to, like, look at the board and see, you know, like, how many spots are there, and it's kind of close, but to, like, where maybe Mariota gets, you know, he's the guy without a chair in the game of musical chairs. But, you know, you look at teams like the Raiders and the Colts, I could see, like, those teams wanting a guy like him. And maybe like a Kirk Cousins or Aaron Rodgers isn't going to be willing to say, hey, I'll be the bridge guy. No. I'm starting, right? So I don't know if they would be willing to do that. So that's in terms of pure bridge quarterbacks. You know, he may be, you know, the best one or one of the best two or three out there.
Last year, you know, when we got to Indy Combine Week, the story was all about the quarterbacks and how many were going to go in the first round and what order were they going to go in after Caleb Williams, et cetera, et cetera. This year, do you have a sense being there that it's less about the players that will be working out and more about Myles Garrett and the quarterback carousel and, you know, existing players? Is that really what people are keying in on for this week or not?
Yeah, I mean, it could be my slanted view that we don't, you know, we're not worrying about quarterback here.
Yeah,
so,
right.
And plus, you know,
fair.
And plus, it's only Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders being viewed as, you know, top quarterback picks. This is also not a great year for wide receivers. It's a really good year for like the line, which is interesting, but it's definitely not the same excitement level as you get with quarterbacks. I think actually probably the biggest thing will be the veteran quarterback market. Like, to what degree are the Rams really going to trade Stafford? If so, you know, either way, what does that mean? You know, where does Sam Darnold land? Like, you mentioned Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Kirk Cousins. Like, there's a lot of musical chairs out there and teams, you know, at various levels of desperation. You know, you feel the Giants probably are really desperate to get somebody. They have the third pick, so they may just draft a quarterback. But, you know, what are the Steelers going to do, et cetera? So I think that is really such a big deal. But in terms of, you know, beyond that, you know, I think with the draft, you know, it's probably going to be still, you know, Shedeur Sanders, Cam Ward. What do people think of them? Like, are they really going to go top 3-4? Or are they going to slide down further than people are suggesting now? But, yeah, I think the veteran market is actually going to be probably as much, if not a bigger deal this week than the combine itself.
Yeah, I agree with you. So let's just talk lastly, and I know you got to run, but Washington doesn't pick until 29 in the first round, but they have picks in the first three rounds, and they're going to be active in the draft, and they have holes to fill. So do you have a short list of players that you're excited to see, you know, work out in Indy or not?
Well, I think probably the biggest thing is, like, say, for offensive tackle and defensive end, do the guys, like, there's a chunk of players who are going to be in that 29 area range. You got offensive tackles like Josh Connerly out of Oregon. You got defensive ends like the two kids from Texas A&M, Shamar Stewart, maybe he goes earlier, Nick Scowerton, a guy I've mentioned before. Do all the guys who people are being viewed as a top, as a first round, top 50 pick, do they all come out of here clean? Do they measure well? Do they interview well? You know, is the buzz, everybody checked all the boxes, that's good? Because that's obviously huge, because you want, you know, whoever Washington zeroes in on, if that's going to be one of those positions, you want them to have as many options as possible. The way it currently looks, looking, you know, talking to people and looking at, you know, various other people's views, is like there'll be offensive tackles and defensive ends there for them at 29. Obviously, we'll see what they do in free agency, but those are the things that they need. If they don't sign some sort of veteran tackle in free agency, I think they're still going to have to get, you know, a potential future left tackle. I don't know if Brandon Coleman is the answer. He could start somewhere, but I don't know if it's going to be left tackle ultimately. And then, you know, edge rusher, you know, same thing. Not only do they need more help, but, you know, they also need bodies, right? Other than Dorrance Armstrong, they don't really have anybody who's bad. You know, Dante Fowers Tech is a free agent. Cleveland Farrell's a free agent, and so on. So, you know, they need bodies, but also they need, you know, they need potentially a star at that key position to help with pass rush as well as the edge. So, you know, taking one at 29 would make a lot of sense. But because this draft is so deep, it's considered deep at defensive end and line as a whole, you know, could you wait until round two and then in that first round, like I said, take your offensive tackle? This doesn't look like a draft where wide receiver is necessarily going to be in play that high. Maybe some guys fall back, but this is like, it could be only like three guys picked in the first round. So, I think they're in a good spot right now for the two lines, but, you know, needless to say, free agency will dictate a lot in terms of what they still need coming once they get to the first round.
Lastly, again, what did last year's first Adam Peters draft tell you about what to look for this week and then eventually what he does at the end of April?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think one thing, if you're looking at the resume lines, we can quibble over, you know, film work and what people think. You can't quibble over team captains. They had 9 picks last year, 7 were team captains. This is part of the whole culture situation. It's not just, you know, it's not just the measurables. They're looking at the person, the mind, the thinker, the competitor. And I think that's obviously something you want to look at. I mentioned a guy like Nick Scowerton before. I had him in my mock draft to Washington at 29 just to throw somebody in there. But, like, he was a team captain at Purdue when he was a 19-year-old sophomore. He's only 20 now. He transferred to Texas A&M. Like, that says a lot, right, if you're a 19-year-old being named a team captain. So, you know, what does it say about that guy? And who are some of the other players? I think Travion Henderson, the running back from Ohio State, also a team captain, a dynamic running back. So, you know, to me, like, that's sort of a, you know, if there's a couple guys you're looking at, look at that, to me would be an interesting tiebreaker, just based on last year with Peters. And then beyond that, look, he's not afraid to, you know, everything on this team was a need last year, but, you know, he wasn't afraid to take the best player available. When Johnny Newton was sitting there, we wouldn't have said they needed defensive tackles right last year. So, you know, he's willing to take who he thinks is the best guy, not the screaming need the way we all kind of talk about it sometimes.
Thanks. Appreciate it. I'll talk to you end of the week or maybe sooner.
Awesome, man. See ya.
Ben Standing, everybody. He nailed it. The team captain thing is one of the things that last year's Adam Peters first draft in D.C. told us. But there was something else that we learned from that draft as well. Something else that you should be looking for in Indy this week in terms of potential players on Adam Peters' radar. I'll tell you what that is when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
So if you're one of those that will be paying attention to the Indy Combine workouts this week and looking at Washington's draft choices and trying to determine, you know, a list of players that you think would fit best, keep in mind a few things from year one of Adam Peters' draft in 2024. Ben nailed one of them. 7 of the 9 picks were team captains. Culture is a big deal. That won't change in year two. They're looking for players that fit their profile. Remember, they talked a lot about having, you know, aligned vision on the kind of player traits they're looking for. Team captains were a big part of it. Leadership, a big part of it. We know that Adam Peters is not afraid to draft best player available. So when we get to the actual draft night, we won't be looking at drafting for need. We'll be looking at drafting best player available. Johnny Newton was an example of that. But maybe the most telling thing about Washington's draft last year was something called relative athletic score, RAS. We referred to it a lot after the draft. It was created by this guy, Kent Lee Platt, for Pro Football Network. It collects a multitude of players' test results, test metrics, physical attributes to generate a score between 0 and 10, measuring a prospect's overall athleticism for the sport of football. Well, Washington last year, out of 32 teams, had the number one draft class for relative athletic score. And that was, by the way, without two players working out in Indy. Jaden Daniels did not work out in Indianapolis last February, nor did Johnny Newton. Johnny Newton because he was injured. But Sanristil, Sinnott, Coleman, McCaffrey, McGee, Hampton, and John Baptiste all did. And their average RAS score of 9.427 was the highest of any draft class in the NFL last year. Number two, by the way, was Philadelphia's draft class with Quinyon Mitchell, with Cooper DeJean, with Jalix Hunt, who played well in the Super Bowl, Will Shipley, and so on. So leadership, sort of innate leadership, innate quality, high quality, loves football, can lead kind of a player. And then RAS scores are things to look at coming out of this Indy Combine when you start to put together a list of potential targets for Washington in the draft. And then when we get to draft, you know, night one and night two, it will be best player available. Now, you know, whenever we talk best player available, we always understand the idea of if it's really close, they'll take the player that fits the need more. But if it's not close, they're going to take a player like Johnny Newton, who in the moment when he was selected, nobody thought, wow, they really need defensive tackles. By the way, they do. All right, Joe Beninati will join us next. We'll talk about the incredible game that Alex Ovechkin had yesterday, what he's chasing, and really where the Caps are as a Stanley Cup contender right now. We'll do that when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We are free and live on the Odyssey app. I want to tell you right now about Window Nation's deal that you have to access before the end of the month. It ends February 28th. You call them at 866-90-NATION or head to windownation.com. Mention my name. You'll get a free in-home estimate. So you've got nothing to lose. Window Nation's got the best product, the most insulated windows. They've got incredible customer service, and right now 60% off on all windows with no payments and no interest charged for 2 years. You'll pay nothing for 2 years. 866-90-NATION, windownation.com.
Great weekend for the Caps following the break of the Four Nations. They played two games. They scored a total of 15 goals in those two games. They beat Pittsburgh on Saturday 8-3. They beat the Oilers on Sunday 7-3. Alex Ovechkin had his second hat trick of the season against the Oilers. He's 12 away from tying Wayne Gretzky, 13 away from breaking the record. The Caps also have the most points in the NHL with 84. The Wizards lost to the Magic on Sunday 110-90. Jordan Poole had 16 points to lead the Wizards. In the NFL, Shador Sanders not going to throw at the Combine this week. Unsure whether or not Kim Ward will throw at the Combine, but you will see Riley Leonard, Jackson Dart, and Jalen Milroe. You could be seeing Matthew Stafford in new colors coming up soon. The Rams have granted him access to seek out a trade. The Giants and the Browns are two teams rumored to have interest in Matthew Stafford. A number of different NFL players been released today, including Panthers linebacker Shaq Thompson, Browns safety Juan Thornhill, and it's expecting that by the end of the day, Jaguars wide receiver Christian Kirk will be released as well. And that's what's trending.
882 is now the total for Alex Ovechkin after yesterday's hat trick in a 7-3 win over Edmonton. They outscored the Penguins and Edmonton Oilers in back-to-back days 15-6. Like, the team itself is a major story right now. But Ovechkin's chasing down Gretzky is the top story. He's 13 away, 12 away from tying, 13 away from setting the mark. We are glad to have back one of our favorites on the show as a guest, Joe Beninati, the longtime voice of the Capitals on the Monumental Sports Network. You can follow Joe on X on Twitter, at JoeBPXP. So I know that you have kind of looked at the schedule probably, you know, yesterday after he got to within 13, and you're looking at the day and whether or not you're going to have the game. So give me the Joe Beninati game in which he sets the mark prediction.
Oh, the agony, the agony. it's an agony for me and for the network.
Right.
It's an absolutely splendid situation to try and forecast it for the player. And isn't it interesting, Kevin? I mean, you mentioned how well they produced, the team did, in the first two games back
from the Four Nations faceoff break. He doesn't have a single point in an 8-goal performance against Pittsburgh, which has never happened in the 20 seasons of his career. Have the Caps ever done that well in an individual game without any production from number 8? And then he turns around and bags the hat trick, and the discussion comes right back.
Yeah.
In the third period, as soon as Edmonton pulled the goalie yesterday, I knew it was going to happen. I'm watching up in the press box, and I'm like, yeah, this is a guarantee. And bang, it happens. And now all of a sudden, everybody starts doing the math, and you're asking me to try and figure out where it's going to be.
I know you well enough to know that you have done the math, and you've got two or three games that are going to be games that you're going to call that you're hoping it happens then. I'm just curious as to which two or three games you've honed in on.
The two or three, early April at home with Chicago,
right?
Which would be a good thing for Monumental. Potentially at Columbus on the 12th, I think that is.
Right.
That would be a bad thing for Monumental. And then I believe, I wouldn't be surprised if it waits till the last game of the regular season in Pittsburgh. How about those for three? And I do think Monumental is going to have a piece of that. I think it's still a fluid situation with regard to who's broadcasting where and when. But I continually say this, it's not about us, it's about Alex. But boy, oh boy, after 20 seasons of watching this guy work and calling, describing better than 90% of his goals, you know we want a piece of 894 and 895, and I hope it works out that way. I really do.
I mean, the current math based on average goals per game would have it the Chicago April 4th game. But it's a pace that doesn't seem logical for him to continue on. So you're
looking at the one game that. He's 39. Kennedy's 39. There's nothing that's logical about this guy. This is superhuman.
Yeah. Real quickly on the final goal yesterday, were you surprised that they pulled their goaltender down 3?
No, when you have Draisaitl and McDavid, I don't think you're ever out of a game.
Okay.
And I don't think either of those guys were particularly dangerous yesterday. Draisaitl's amazing to me on the power play. McDavid was covered up pretty well, really well, I thought, by Pierre-Luc Dubois. Dubois doesn't get enough credit, Kevin, for not only the job that he does against the other top centers, but he requests the assignment. He and Spencer Carberry are in very good communication with each other about, hey, do you want this assignment tonight? Because yesterday's game was a home game. I can match. We can get you the hard match with McDavid. And Dubois says, give it to me. And he's done that against McKinnon and Matthews and Barkov and Aho and Crosby. I can go on and on. Hints. He loves this defensive matchup. He takes pride in it. I believe he held McDavid. He helped to help McDavid without a shot yesterday, which is, again, very unusual for arguably the game's most talented and best player in the league. So Dubois deserves a great deal of credit for that. But no, when you've got those two players who could very likely be two of the very best on the planet, you're never out of it, so you take a chance.
Do you think that the results of these two games over the weekend against teams that had players in the first, four in the Four Nations and the Caps did not, do you think that there was a little extra incentive and, by the way, a little extra rest that benefited Washington?
I'm sure they benefited from the rest. I don't think they needed to be incentivized in any way. I think the league now understands where Washington is at 38-11-8 with the best mark in the league. Just how good this team is operating and how well they're performing. I'm glad they got a little bit of a break. I'm glad that there was no risk of injury. I hope nobody was going to turn an ankle on the beach. But, do they take pride? Would they love to play for their respective nations? Absolutely. And I'm sure this will be there'll be another review process come Olympic time next year. But for now, the goals are obvious. The goals are to do extremely well as Washington Capitals and win as many games as possible in the regular season and see if they can add up to 16 in the playoffs.
Talking to Joe B, I'll come back to the Caps and Ovechkin in a moment. I just want your reaction to the Four Nations. I think I had you on right before, and you kind of talked about and explained what was going to happen. And by the way, it was a bit of a reveal for me. I'm not going to lie to you, but Were you expecting this level of play, this intensity, the reaction? By the way, the championship game is the all-time highest rated NHL game on television since the 70s. Were you expecting that going in? Just give me your overall big takeaways from this.
Kev, we really haven't had best-on-best international hockey since 2016, I want to say, was a World Cup of hockey. The last two Olympic Games in South Korea and in Beijing, the NHL did not send its players to those events. So I think a lot of the players and the nations that participated in the Four Nations were very much looking forward to seeing best against best again. And whenever you have Canada against the United States in hockey, the United States has made terrific strides at the under-18 level, at the world junior level. They're the two-time reigning world junior champions now, the United States. There are a number of the game's very, very best. And I want to say, of the NHL, Kevin, I think it's 28% is U.S.-born players, 41% Canadian players. So they are the two biggest chunks of the NHL. When they get together and you have the chance to put those lineups together and you just peruse, my God, they have that guy, that guy, that guy. The question for me was it going to be full blast intensity? And I guess we got the answer. It was spectacular to watch. And as someone who's had the great fortune, I called the Olympics in 2002. I called the Olympics in 2006. As a hockey fan, your heart beats out of your chest when you see these lineups together. And I'm glad. I'm so glad they caught it at the right moment in the sports calendar where they could dominate and take a lot of impressions around the country and around the world to say, wow, this was a great tournament. It was spectacular for the game. Extremely well done by the NHL and by the Players Association. Bravo.
Yeah, I mean, I'm reading different accounts of what this did, but basically it looks like the predominant reporting is that the 9.3 million that watched this championship game, it was the most watched non-Olympic hockey game on record because Nielsen didn't exist in the 70s when they had some. That's remarkable. I mean,
it's a great ahead. Sign. It's a great sign, and it obviously points towards what we hope will be a tremendous Olympics in 26 in Milano Cortina. They've got it set up really nicely now, coming off of this Four Nations. You're going to have Olympics in 26. You're going to have the return of the World Cup in 28, and then you'll have another Olympic event. I want to say that's the Alps of France in 30. So they're doing, they realize, the NHL and I believe the Players Association realize just how great a spectacle it can be when you can put all of this talent. And the league's in a great place, Kevin. The league's in a super place as far as young, talented players who have a ton of personality and an immense skill to show off the best parts of this game. And it does my heart well because I love it so much.
All right, before we come back to Ovechkin, the Caps right now are the President's Trophy leader. They've got 84 points. Winnipeg's won 9 in a row. They've got 1 point less. But the Caps are essentially running away with the one seed in the East at this point. But I know at one point when they were playing very well, maybe a month, month and a half ago, we talked, and you still said, look, there are still some teams that the Caps would not be favored against, you know, in a best of seven. How do you view the Caps with regard to the rest of the Eastern Conference today?
Yeah, let me make a little amends to that. Are there teams that they wouldn't be favored against? That would be interesting by season's end. If they do monopolize the East the way they've done, I would think they would be a heavy favorite against whomever they play. Now, does that mean that they would be averse to completely getting an uncomfortable matchup in the first round? If you look at the wild cards right now, Detroit, Ottawa, Columbus, Boston, Rangers, any of those five teams could make things uncomfortable. But the Caps would be favored. There are things that I can point to speed-wise for Detroit and Ottawa Columbus is a team that's very much on the rise. Boston and Washington always give each other a really hard time. And the Rangers have maybe the best goalie on the planet, who you don't want to be playing 4 out of 7 times. But would that's discomfort. That's uncomfortable. But you're going to be the favorite there. And if you do what you've done through the first 57 games, you should prevail there. Now, Carolina, Jersey. Carolina, terrific squad. Washington's going to be the favorite in that. It'll be uncomfortable again. Jersey, tremendous speed. But I think you get through and get out of your own bracket there if you take care of the wild card and you win the second round. When you get to the third, you're likely facing, I would guess, either Toronto or the defending Stanley Cup champions. And it would be fantastic. We're getting way ahead of ourselves here.
Yeah.
But I don't think Washington's going to be afraid of anybody. And I think there will be teams that don't want to have any business to do with Washington. With the what the Caps have shown me, Kev, in the last, well, throughout the first 4 or 5 months of the season, they can beat you any way you want to do it. You want to play at 5-4, we'll do that. You want to play at 2-1, we'll beat you 2-1. And that, if you want to play a physical game, they're perhaps one of the biggest teams in the league. I don't think you want to do that. You want to play a speed game, they'll come up with some contraptions and some approaches. The coaches and the coaching staff will come up with some way to figure out how to beat your 4 out of 7. They're going to be a tough, tough out. I don't think they're a paper tiger. I really don't. I think they are going to give people a lot of problems.
Right now, I'm just looking, you know, BetMGM right now, Carolina and Florida are betting favorites ahead of the Caps to win the Eastern Conference. The Caps are third.
Those two teams are great. Kevin, those two teams are really good. So is Washington. I wouldn't be afraid of that matchup. Those two teams are very good. I can understand why the betting public, by the betting
odds makers,
Cognoscenti would do that, but I still think Washington's right there with them.
Joe, why is Alex Ovechkin doing this year in the way he's doing it?
He's a very intelligent offensive hockey player. He knows where to be. And maybe he doesn't get there with the speed and the ferocity that he used to, but he knows where to go, and the puck finds him. And that tends to happen with highly skilled offensive players. And then he has a possession that I don't know if anybody has ever had a shot like that in the history of the game. And he'll be 90 years old, and he'll be able to shoot the puck like this.
Yeah.
It's a fact of life.
Right.
And if you shoot or shoot in the right, shoot or shoot. And this one shoots extraordinarily well. And there's a unique quality to his shot, I think, that comes from the type of equipment that he uses, the stick blade, the curvature that he has. NHL goalies tell me facing him is like facing a tremendous baseball pitcher with an explosive slider. When Alex takes a shot, it doesn't come flat at them. It comes with a curve. It's dipping away. It's constantly moving. And it's very unusual, and it gives goalies fits, and it's going to for however long he chooses to play. I like the fact that he's getting goals in more different ways than he used to.
How so?
Again, you'll find him in different spots on the rink. You'll see him scoring down the right wing. He scored a goal in Philadelphia before the break where it was off the rush down the right circle. And that's highly unusual for the pattern that you see. If you pop in an Alex Ovechkin highlight tape, it's usually not from that side of the rink. Beautiful goal. Nice finish. He'll get rebounds. He'll get deflections. He'll get tips. He'll be camped out more in front of the cage. They're moving him more on the power play. And if the Caps power play gets going, this record is going to fall, and it might fall this spring. I keep saying might, and then I watch yesterday and go, it's gonna.
Yeah, I think he's
like a great running back. What's that expression you guys have in football? He has a nose for the goal line. When this player sees a milestone, 500, 600, 700, 800, whose record am I breaking today? He tends to get such a nose for the goal line that he gets there in a hurry. It would not surprise me if he does it this spring. It wouldn't surprise me at all.
You know, one of the things just, you know, in the shooters shoot vein, you know, he's not like Robert Horry in the NBA at a much older age could catch and spot up and knock down threes, because the game is different. There's a physicality, you know, involved in the game. I guess my question would be, How much longer can he score at an elite or a very high level being just a shooter? How long can that go on for?
Is he just a shooter? That's the thing. See, he might not get to the spots as quickly as he used to, but he still gets to the spots. If he can't get there, then that shot won't be open for him. So he has the ability to find the spot or get rub off of picks. I'm not trying to make too much of a basketball analogy here, but there's ways for these guys to get open, and he knows how to do it. And he doesn't need 15 feet of clearance to get that shot off. If you give him a half a foot, he'll do it. And he'll do it with pace and precision. His accuracy, when he has the chance to sight a shot, is brilliant. He'll pick corners with the best of them and do it at 90 miles an hour. It's just, it's spectacular to watch. It never grows old to me. And it starts when I watch him in practice. I watch him in practice, and he's still ripping the nets off of the goal. Yesterday, Kevin, he could have easily. And I thought, when I watched this player 20 years ago, I thought we were going to be lucky enough that we were going to be seeing him possibly break NHL records for goals in an individual game. I thought we would see a 5-goal game, a 6-goal game from Alex Ovechkin. He's done four different times. Yesterday, he could have easily had 6. He's still getting chances. And when he does, on most days, he buries them.
The record is 7. Joe Malone?
Long time ago.
Yeah, 1920. In the last 50 years, it's Daryl Sittler who had... several have had 6, excuse me. Several have had
Sittler's
6.
Sittler's was an individual 10-point game. He had 6.
Yeah, it was.
4 equals 10 in one game. Think of that.
Crazy.
I swear,
6 goals, 4 assists.
When I first saw Ovechkin, I thought that would be, I've done 2 different 5-goal games. One of them was Sergei Fedorov against the Caps in Detroit in the mid to late 90s. And I thought Ovechkin was going to be doing that on the regular. 4 times 4, again, I'm appreciative for everything I've ever seen from the Great 8. But like yesterday, he had chances to go for 5 or 6. He had 9 shots total. He was shaking his head at 3 or 4 of them that probably should have gone. And that's, would it be surprising to me if he does one of these sorts of 4 or 5s? No. There are times when it just doesn't make any sense that at age 39, he's still able to do this with all these young Tigers racing around and defending him. He knows where to be. He has very good setup people. That's the other thing. The guys who get him the puck have been doing so in a great manner. And that's critical for this player who, if he has that chance to pull the trigger, boy, he does. And he didn't do anything against Pittsburgh in an 8-goal game, right? And you sit there and you go, oh, well, maybe. And then the next day, boom. That's just what he's capable of.
Well, just a couple more booms, and you're going to get a chance to call the record breaker. I got to run. You're the absolute best. I love having these conversations with you. Really hoping it's a game in which you guys are on the call. Thanks, Joe.
Oh, you and me both. Count on it. Thanks.
Joe Beninati, everybody. We are done for the day. Chris Russell next.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 3-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.